If you only had 24 hours to live and you had to teach your son or sons everything you learned about being a man, from life to love, money to marriage, people to porn, and everything in between, what lessons would you teach him? Well, when my son was only 12 years old, I wrote a book for him I wanted to leave behind as my legacy. It's called Are You the Man? 201 Lessons I Wish My Dad Would Have Taught Me. And I squeezed all of those lessons on manhood into just 124 pages. The lessons I share in this book not only come from my successes in life, but many of them also come from my painful and even shameful failures, including divorce, abuse, addiction, adultery, and abandonment, just to name a few. You can read and learn in less than 2 hours what it took me over 30 plus years to learn the hard way. So just go over to areyoutheman.com and get your copy today. That's areyoutheman.com. Trust me, your wife and children will thank you for it later.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Guys, today we actually have a returning guest, and his name is Rob Flood. And Rob is a pastor and the author of the book, With These Words, Five Communication Tools for Marriage and Life. And Rob serves as a community and care pastor at Covenant Fellowship College in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, where his responsibilities include marriage ministry and counseling. And prior to joining Covenant Fellowship in 2006, he served with Family Life, a division of Crew in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I asked Rob to make a return visit to the show because I didn't think we had enough time last week to go deeper into his book. I was so intrigued with Rob's testimony that I decided to nix my plan and obey the Holy Spirit and give dive deeper into his personal story as opposed to his book, which didn't leave us much time to discuss those five communication tools for life. And he touched on them, but today I want to explore each one of those tools in more detail with Rob. So please join me in welcoming back Rob Flood to the Real Men Connect podcast. Welcome back, Rob.
Thanks for having me again, Dr. Joe. It's great to be with you.
Now, Rob, I'm pretty sure you didn't think it was going to be a marathon interview when you first came on this show.
It's good. It's been a good conversation for sure.
Yes, it is. And your topic is so timely. And so I know that it was worth doing a follow-up show on it to really give it the attention that it deserves. And you know, if they want to find out more about your testimony and what got me sidetracked, they can always go back to last week and listen to that episode, because I was so intrigued with your personal story, even though that's not where we were intending to go with it, because I thought you had such a unique testimony. And then when you got into talking about your relationship with Gina when you first got married, which I think it was just a wonderful story about some of the conflicts you guys experienced in your first year of marriage, I thought that in itself could have been the whole show, in which it took up a little bit of time, but I want them to go back and listen to that. But as you went through the show, you started talking about, and I have my notes here, where is, oh yeah, you talked about the four key principles when it comes to our words, and you covered those, and they can go back and listen to that. But then you dived into the five tools, and what you did is you talked about each one of them, but I didn't get to really ask you any follow-up questions about them. So for the context of this show, and obviously we didn't even get a chance to do the man up question. That's how strapped we were for time. But for the purpose of this show, what we're going to do, I'm going to have you start by just sharing with us, again, covering those five tools, and then we're going to dive into each and every one of them. And who knows, we may get stuck on one, and that may be fine too. Because I'm already thinking the first tool you're going to talk about is probably the one that I think probably we as men probably struggle with the most. But I'll let you tell me what you've learned from sharing this with other people. So give us those five tools again, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah, let me give you an overview. The five tools are an application of the biblical principles God gives us for speech and how we're supposed to use words. So the first one is the tool of first response, which essentially says the direction of a conversation is not governed by the person who starts the conversation, but by the person who first responds to the person who starts the conversation. That one, once we get our head around that one, seriously, we can apply so much biblical truth and turn our conversations toward redemptive purposes. The second one is the tool of prayer. And that is simply dialoguing with the third person in the room when we're having marital conversations. It's realizing that God is available to us before, during conversations, and after conversations, and that He desires to be an active part of those. The third one is the tool of physical touch. And this is built on the premise that it is very difficult to be in conflict with someone you are affectionately touching. And so it serves as a wonderful protection and an alert when the conversation is starting to go sideways. The fourth one is the tool of mirroring. And this is when you repeat in your own words what the other person is saying. And what this does is it ensures that the conversation doesn't move forward until there's been comprehension. It slows a conversation down, but oftentimes that's for the better. And it makes sure that what my wife is saying, I'm actually understanding. And that is what I'm reacting and responding to, not a misunderstanding of what she's saying. And then that last one is the tool of proper timing, which is built on the idea that you can actually say the right thing in the right way at the wrong time and be out of step with the will and the Spirit of God. And so we need to discern not just the right thing to say, not just the right way to say it, but the right time to say it, because each moment has a need. And so those are the tools at a real high overview.
And say, and Rob, thank you for reviewing that for us again. Now I'm hoping the guys can see now who are listening to this week, part two of this, that I didn't get to ask you any follow-up questions about any of those things. And what you just shared, those tools are so powerful to me. And when I'm hearing, I'm like, man, there's so much truth in those things. And but Rob, as I listen to them and I hear these tools, I'm thinking, man, that is great in theory, when it works. And I'm thinking to myself, having been married before and now in a second marriage, and also working with coaching and counseling and discipling men, that these tools are hard to use and apply when you're in the heat of the moment or whatever it may be. And so that's why I wanted to bring you back on the show, because you've given us these awesome, amazing tools, but it's sort of like putting a hammer in the hand of a baby, you know, or a screwdriver or a wrench. The tools, nothing's wrong with the tools, but it was the person who's using the tools. If they haven't been taught, if they haven't been trained on how to use them, those tools can actually be used as a weapon and could be harmful to themselves and to other people. And so I didn't just want you to talk about the tools on the last show. I want you to show us how we can actually use them and apply them. And let's start with the first one, because I got to tell you, that first one is powerful to me. You said the tool of first response. The tool of first response. You said the nature of a conflict is not determined by the person who starts the conversation, but rather by the person who responds first to it. And you used the example that Jesus was great at this. Now, I got to tell you, from a practical standpoint, you're saying we should be the first responder of how we react. A lot of times when we're in that position, okay, I'm going to respond, we allow the person to dictate our response, because we either may get defensive, or we may be offended by what they say and how they approach us, or the timing can be off when they do it. So I want you to share with us, in now using this tool, you're going to put this tool in our hands. How can we use this tool without injuring ourselves or other people, and how to make it make sense to us, even using the model of Jesus Christ?
Good. Yeah. The way you just put it was, we allow the person to dictate our response to them. That's certainly one way to put it. But if we understand James 4 and how our heart works and overflows out of our mouth and out of through our behavior, what's really dictating our response is our focus on ourselves, defending ourselves or how we feel like we've been wronged, instead of the will of God. And this is why Jesus is so helpful to look at. In one sense, he's the God-man and did not sin, and so we can distance ourselves from his example. But on the other side of that, we know he always did the will of the Father. And so when we watch how he responded to the many attacks that he received from the Pharisees, the Sadducees, those who would try to entrap him, we know how he responded was in keeping with the will of the Father. So what did he do? He didn't surrender control of that conversation to the bad intentions of his entrappers. He realized, no, I can steer this toward a redemptive end. I can respond in such a way that we honor God in this conversation, even if the person who started the conversation did not want to honor God. And so we see it over and over and over again. He's given a conundrum where choice A and choice B are his only choices, and either way, he's going to alienate some people or offend some people. Jesus always finds a choice C. He always is in communication with the Father so that his response moves toward God's will. And so this tool of first response, it's pictured perfectly in Proverbs 15, where it says a gentle answer turns away wrath. Well, what's going on there? Wrath is the initiator. Wrath is coming at us. And what we're told there is our response can actually turn it away. Our response is so powerful that we can steer what happens with that wrath. But what happens too frequently is wrath comes at us, we gear up, we dig deep, and we throw wrath right back.
Right, right. Now, okay, so let's park there a little bit, because I think that's great. And I take some notes when you were saying that, Rob, and you correct me because I'm allowing you to teach me how to use the tool. So you're saying basically we get in trouble when as a first responder, when we're focused on ourselves and not focused on God and honoring him.
100%. Yeah.
So our perspective needs to change, that even if they come at us in the wrong way or whatever, we need to be focused on him, not them, or even ourselves, but we need to be focusing on what is going to be the most honoring to God. Another thing that jumped out at me, what you said, is that what Jesus did, he's always steered the conversation to a redemptive end, that he's looking at what is going to honor God, what is going to reveal God more to the people who he's talking to. And I think that's very interesting that Jesus did that. And the thing that I thought was very eye-opening, what you said, that typically when we get into a conversation or a conflict with someone else, we're arguing two viewpoints. We think it's black or white, A or B. And you said, but Jesus always had an option C. You know, and I like the fact that it's the letter C, the Christ option. You know, that's what I'm gonna keep that in my head mentally when I get in conversation. What's the Christ? What's option C, the Christ option? So let's get a little bit more specific with that, because I want to dive deeper into that, because that makes perfect sense. All right. But so you've been doing this longer, Rob. You wrote about it. You've gone through it with your wife, and you guys have now learned a lot looking back, hindsight 2020. But so what if the person then approaches you with an accusation? Now, they're not approaching Jesus with theology and trying to see if he knows the law and what he's going to do. We're talking about somebody coming at you, accusing you of something that you didn't do, or falsely accusing you of something they think you did, but you didn't do, or a flat out lie on you. How would that look in real time in being a first responder? What are some of our options? What could we do?
So one of the things with all of these tools, but it would be helpful to lay this foundation in answering this question you just asked me, is we are better served in marriage. It's in relationships in general, but we're talking specifically in marriage. We're best served when we play the long game. When we realize, hey, I'm going to be married to this woman 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, the stakes, what's at stake right now is not as high as it feels like it is. You know, when we strike back, if we're wrongly accused by our spouse, if we strike back to harm her, all we've done is doubly harm the marriage. She may have harmed us in the false accusation. She may be wrong in how she's initiated. All we've done is add another wrong. You know, I've likened this to, you know, a player on an NFL team that takes a cheap penalty at the worst possible time.
Yeah.
They've lost sight of the big picture, and they've doubly hurt their team. And that's what happens in our marriage. We lose sight of the big picture. So now let me come to your question. If my wife were to falsely accuse me of something. Maybe it's something super small. Maybe it's something grievous, you know, something really, really significant. What's behind that accusation is what I want to address. I want to respond to what has motivated her to say that, not to the words or the tone of what she has said. And so let's say, let's just go to a more grievous example. Maybe she didn't like the way I looked at a woman in the mall or at the store. And she's like, you know, you were lusting after her. What's going on in that moment? I can defend myself, or I can realize my wife feels vulnerable on what she thought she saw. My response will get to dictate which of those two things I deal with, her tone or her hurting heart. And so, you know, sweetheart, I'm sorry. I'm not even sure which person you're talking about, but clearly you're upset and I don't want you upset. Can you just remind me what it was you were talking about? What did you see? Now I'm not defending myself. I'm stepping into what she saw and I'm trying to understand what's gotten her to the point to where she has said this to me. We're having a different conversation than if I had said, I didn't do that. Okay, yes, you did. No, you didn't. Where have we gotten at that point? Do you see? So this tool of first response helps us get to what's really going on at the heart level of our marriage.
Rob, I think that is excellent. I love that. That is great. You know, what really resonated with me when you used the sports analogy with the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. You know, I love football and a lot of guys do. And you're absolutely right. I just lose my mind when I see a guy gets an unsportsmanlike conduct. I'm like, dude, I know the dude disrespected you. You know, I know he shoved you. Is it really worth hurting your entire team because you couldn't control your temper just for a few seconds and walk away? And you couldn't do that. And I never thought about, we do that all the time in our relationships, in our marriage. We get that unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in damaging the team because we couldn't control ourselves and our emotions. But the way you just described, that makes perfect sense. You know, as you're saying that, Rob, I'm thinking Jesus did that. That's what Jesus would do. Jesus said, okay, I know they asked this, and I know they said that. But the crazy thing about it, Jesus already knew their motives and already knew their heart. But for our edification and us to understand, he wanted us to see. Now, watch what I ask them that will reveal to you what they're really trying to get at and what the real issue is. Jesus was excellent at doing that. And I never thought about maybe Jesus wants us to do the same thing when we're in conflict with people. But let me ask you this though, Rob, because I've never heard the term how used in a conversation the way you used it in your book, first responder. I've never heard it used in that context before. Why do you think it's so important for us to be a first responder? It seems kind of obvious to me, but I want to hear in your words, why do you think it's so important for us to be a first responder and not a first reactor?
Yeah, we have, as married people here for your show, as men, we have a front row seat to our wife's greatest strengths and to our wife's greatest weaknesses. We get into a vulnerable place for her more than anybody else does. And if we are reactors, we get into this very sensitive place in our wife's mind and in her heart, and we just wreak havoc by being careless. We don't even have to intentionally want to harm it. If we step into that space carelessly, we're knocking stuff off the shelves, we're tearing furniture, and we don't even mean to. But if we purposefully respond as these first responders, think of how we build up our brides. Think of how we're laying aside what we think is best for us for the sake of our brides. When we do that, we are reflecting Christ's love for the church, which is what we're called to reflect with our wives, and our marriage reflects the glory of God so much better. So being first responders, particularly as men, lays aside our pride and lays aside our reactions and allows us to be purposeful God glorifiers in our marriages.
You know what? This makes so much sense. And before we move on to the second tool, you know, because I'm always I love hearing what the teacher says, But then I love putting it in my own way, to my own words for myself, so I can understand it. Because it's no different than what you said with the tool of mirroring. We're going to get to that in a second about mirroring. So correct me if I'm wrong in my understanding of this and what you're saying and how to be a better first responder. Because we always say it's not, you say it's not what you say, it's not even how you say it, but also when you say it. But you're saying even when those rules are violated by the other person, and correct me, Rob, if I'm wrong, even if those rules are violated, the tongue is wrong, the words they chose was wrong, the timing is wrong, we're not to focus on those things, focus on the heart of the person. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly in how we respond.
In how we respond.
It could be the next day you come back and you say, hey, can we, I think we resolved everything last night. Can we just come back rather than launch an accusation grenade at me next time? Could you maybe just open with a question? You know, you could always come back. It's not that we absolve everything wrong that's happened to us, but in that moment, what we need to do is a gentle answer. We need a purposeful response so that that conversation can move toward redemptive purposes. We can always come back and review later how we're doing at our communication. And that's where our spouse's weaknesses or even failures can even come up as constructive conversation when the stakes are much lower.
Yes. You know, because Rob, I think that speaks to the man out there who believes, well, Joe, is Rob telling me I need to be a doormat and I just need to be taking it? And no, what you're saying, no, it's a timing thing. And like you said, looking at the long game, this is a long-term solution, but this is not just this moment. I wrote something down that I thought was great how you said it. It said, the stakes may be high, but it's not as high as it feels. And I think, wow, that's a powerful statement, because when we're in our feelings and our emotion, it just seems like it's the end all to be all, when really it's just a moment, a snapshot, a moment in time of your entire marriage. You know, then more than likely, you're probably going to forget about 10 or 15 years from now anyway. You know, so, but what a great, great reminder. We're talking to my guest, Rob Flood, who is the author of With These Words, 5 Communication Tools for Marriage and in Life. And this is part 2 of my conversation with him. And now you guys see why I wanted to bring Rob back on, because we didn't even get a chance to scratch the surface of this before. But thank you, Rob, for helping us understand what it means to be a first responder. And I think that should be our goal as husbands, is to be a first responder, not just with our wives, but also with our children and coworkers and anybody else who we value the relationship that we're in with. So I think that's a great, great tool. Thanks for teaching us how to use that tool.
No, now, you're welcome.
You mentioned in your book, we mentioned in football about the unsportsmanlike penalty, conduct penalty, but you also mentioned in your book an analogy about how prayer in marriage is often like a veggie tray at the Super Bowl party. And you said that now prayer is also a tool that we should be able to use in our marriage. How can couples work towards using prayer better in their relationships? And why do you equate it to a veggie tray at a Super Bowl party?
So the quick story there is we have a Super Bowl party every year. We have a large family. I've got 6 kids. So if we invite nobody, we got a big party, right? And we always have kind of the fried finger foods, the wings, the chicken nuggets, that kind of stuff. And my wife, it's the one night of the year where she lets us eat all that stuff. She's very health conscious. At this party, there's always a raw veggie tray out there. And the kids never touch it. She always has to call them back. They put their 2 pieces of broccoli, the celery, whatever. Of course, I have to load half my plate with it because I want a happy wife. But it's that veggie tray that people aren't normally drawn to, but it's actually the one thing on the whole table that's good for them. That's where the veggie tray parallel comes. Okay. So how can we use prayer more effectively when it comes to our communication? We are best to remember that God is not only present, but desires to be an active participant in our marital communication. He has something at stake in every conversation we have with our wives. He has embedded a very important reflection of his relationship with his church in this institution of marriage. And so he's got some skin in the game when it comes to how we deal with one another. And so how Gina and I will often use this is, if we know we're sitting down to a difficult conversation, then we'll pray beforehand and actively recognize the presence of God, realize our dependence upon God, then asked for his ongoing help through that conversation. As we're talking, if the conversation starts to go poorly, and this is whether we've prayed beforehand or not, if the conversation starts to become tense, there is no rule that says we have to keep going. We can call a timeout and realize, okay, we're not walking in the power of the Spirit right now. We're just not. Let's pray right now together. And then we could pick up right where we left off. Or maybe it explodes and voices have been raised and we got to call more than just a pause, a 30-second timeout for a prayer time. We may need to call, you know, a suspension of the game for a little while and go to our own rooms in the house and meet with Jesus again. Because somewhere in the process, we've gotten out of step with the Spirit if we are attacking one another. But prayer even works if the whole conversation explodes and we've had a 45-minute drawn-out fight, right? At some point, our tempers settle. The Spirit starts to engage our spirit and we feel conviction or regret. Well, it's not too late to pray. And it's not too late to ask forgiveness from God, forgiveness from one another, and to reconcile as we've been bathed in prayer before we come back together. So those are multiple ways that the tool of prayer can and should be used to recognize that there's a third party in that conversation at all times.
Right. Man, that makes so much sense, Rob. And it's a powerful image that you've painted for me, because I'm thinking, and you know, you said that God is not only there, he's asking, will you invite me into this conversation? And I hate to say it, I would say 9 times out of 10, we don't. We don't invite him. And when you were saying that, I got this mental picture in my head of what if when we're engaging in a conversation with our wives or with our children, you say, okay, before we get started, oh, like we pray. Like you said, we would pray before we get started. And I see us doing that. And sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't. But imagine if we say, okay, after we pray, and then I go grab a chair, and my son or my daughter or my wife says, what's that for? Okay, that's God's chair. And just put it as an image while we're talking, looking at that chair. Because I think that could be a symbol or a reminder, like you said, that we can stop and pause this conversation anytime. And every time we look at that chair, it reminds us, are we honoring our guest? Are we inviting him into our conversation? I've never thought about doing anything like that, but that's crazy enough to work. You know, that if you, but could you imagine that? Because if we love him so much, how can we so quick to forget him when we're engaged in the conversation if we love him so much?
You know, there's an answer to that question.
Go ahead, Rob.
How can we so quickly forget him? Because this goes back to the tool of first response, what I hit there. Our eyes get off of his agenda and it becomes driven by our own. Now, what we're thinking about so much is us. There's just no room in our thoughts for God.
Gotcha. Yeah, now you're making the chair make more sense. it's remind you to constantly don't disinvite me. Don't send me away. I'm here. Now, you can choose to walk away and come back, but don't exclude me from the conversation, include me in it. But I never thought about that. That's right, because now we're focusing on our agenda, not his. What a great, great mental picture, image of that. That is awesome. Now, you also mentioned about physical touch, the tool of physical touch. How do you set up the environment to incorporate the tool of physical touch into our communication with our spouses? In other words, how do we introduce it? Because a lot of times when you're going to get into a conflict, they don't want to be touched. You know, and so how do you even set the stage before an argument or you get into that could be kind of like the ground, these are going to be our foundational rules that we're going to incorporate touch into our communication. How do you introduce that into your marriage?
So very few of us schedule conflicts.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, honey, tonight when we get home after the kids are down, let's make sure we fight.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't do that. We may say, hey, tonight after the kids are down, we're going to talk about the finances. Okay. So we know that's going to be a sensitive conversation, but we're not planning the conflict. So what we'll do is we will sit in close proximity to one another. Someplace where we can hold hands or perhaps on our sofa, maybe her legs may be across mine some way that we're just touching like a married couple does in non-sexual ways, just physical affectionate touch. And we try to maintain that throughout the conversation. And here's what inevitably happens. And people who read this, they may be like, man, that doesn't work. Just try what I'm saying and you're going to find out it works almost every time. You will separate from your spouse before the conflict really starts. Because it's very hard to be holding somebody's hand when you're planning to launch a grenade at them. Okay? So what we find is subconsciously, Gina may shift her body, I may shift mine, and now we're not touching anymore. And what we're doing subconsciously is we're making room for the conflict we're about to start. So anytime we're talking, and this isn't every conversation, more conversations than not, she may be in the kitchen, I'm drying the dishes, she's doing her thing, and we're talking about the kids, you know, we're not touching all the time in these things, but particularly on challenging conversations, this tool is super helpful to let you know 30 seconds before a conflict starts. It's like a little warning that says, uh-oh, yellow flag, we're not touching. I'll just ask Gina, you know, is everything okay? Or did I upset you in any way? And she'll be like, sometimes she'll be telling me, well, you know, that last thing you said, I just don't know how to that's why she let go. Sometimes it's totally, no, I was just changing position. I forgot to take your hand. Great. Can I hold your hand? And then we reconnect. But I don't, if we disconnect from one another physically, I don't want my response to be, what, are you upset now? Because what I've just done is I've just thrown gasoline on the fire. I think we can ask, did I do anything to upset you? That's a very different question, isn't it? And what I'm looking to do is to reconnect, to reunite, so that we're able to have that whole difficult conversation while physically touching.
Rob, that is fascinating. And you're right. You know, I don't care, even if you get pushback from that, I could see why it would work. I could just see it. Because it's almost impossible for you to have physical touch and gentle touch and be angry at the person at the same time. But at the same time, like you said, that when the disconnection takes place, what it is, it's a warning sign. The warning light just came on your dashboard. Oh, something, something I said or something I did upset that person. What did I do just now that upset you? It was something I said, you know, and it's just a warning sign. Now, let me ask you this, though, I guess as a side question, how'd you come up with that? As that dynamic, it was just something that you saw just studying the research and human behavior and how we communicate with people and physical touch. Or did you kind of stumble across it? How did you come up with
that? So it's three things. First, just studying the research, studying human behavior, in every culture, really in every culture within that culture's social circles, physical touch is a part of it, whether it's handshaking or hugging or the European kiss on each cheek. There, something symbolizes we're okay. We're good with one another. But Gina and I both come from very affectionate cultures. We both have an Italian background, and there's just a lot of expressiveness, a lot of affection in our households. And so we realized in our own conduct how little we touched in that first 15 months of our marriage, how hard it was when we started having those difficult conversations as we started to put our marriage back together, how hard it was to stay connected. And so we experimented with this. Let's just try this. And we found, okay, that conversation was really hard, but we got through it. And we had it, and our hands holding one another didn't stop us from becoming upset, but it stopped us from intentionally inflicting harm on one another, right? And then you get better and better at that to where it keeps us in a redemptive space now, 25 years later.
You know, you just brought up a great point, Rob. At the minimum, if it just keeps you from harming the other person, you know, that is worth it. We're doing it just for that purpose only, because we, like you said, we don't schedule conflicts, and guess we don't plan to harm our spouses when we have a communication. Okay, I'm gonna see what I can do to hurt her feelings and destroy and crush her heart today. But we could accidentally do it. And this is a way to kind of monitor that, to protect that other person in the conversation. Man, this is good stuff, Rob. Now, let me tell us more about the importance of proper timing. when it comes to talking with your spouse. I know we have to use wisdom and each man's wife is different. But are there some hard, fast rules that we just shouldn't break when it comes to timing, or there's things that we should be looking for as openings or even possible other warning signs?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's one hard, fast rule that I do include in the book. It's toward the end of the chapter on proper timing. And that has to do with actual spoken speech that happens during and after sexual intimacy. Those are very sensitive moments in a marriage. And a very small verbal indiscretion during one of those times has a very disproportionate effect on the relationship and on our spouse. It could be something very, very small, something intended to be a zinger. There's just no place for that in marriage in those moments. More generally speaking, this comes from the end of Ephesians 4:29, where it tells us as fits the occasion. This tool is derived out of that four-word phrase, as fits the occasion. And it combines some of the wisdom that James gives us to be quick to listen and slow to speak. There's a lot that can happen in that slow to speak. And one of those things is assessing the moment, realizing that there is an occasion here, there's a moment, and there are needs for this moment. Does the message I have prepared fit this moment? And if it doesn't, then there's a better time to share it. And this could be as mundane as coming home from work and seeing that Gina has had a rough day with our younger kids. I was going to talk about doing a different place for a vacation. What she really wants is for me to step in and roll up my sleeves and just help out. So I'm going to hold off the vacation conversation, maybe till tonight, maybe till the weekend, even though I was all excited to share with her some research I had done. Now, the need for this moment is not a big conversation, not changing family traditions. It's just rolling up my sleeves and getting busy with the family. So if I'm slow to speak, I walk in, I assess where she is today. That then informs me on the words that I should be saying.
Now, let me ask you this then, like, and we'll use an extreme, for instance, because that makes sense what you're saying. All right. Because we got to be able to read and understand, live with our wives in an understanding way, to know when is the right time. And I like the fact that you pointed out that after sexual intimacy, you got to be very careful. It's not a time to get sarcastic or make sly comments or even joking around, because emotions are high.
Vulnerability.
Yeah. So that makes sense. But let's use an extreme example. I like using extremes. Because I'm trying to think, if a man has committed adultery and cheated on his wife and he now is feeling guilty over it, right? I mean, he's walking around in shame and he can't even function right. He's like, okay, she may not ever find out, but I just can't. I'm not at peace and I need to tell her about it. Is there any time that's a good time to tell the person?
So that's a fair question. It's the first time I've been asked that question. The answer, though, I think is pretty clear. There's no time you're going to choose that's going to bless her in the immediate. There are better times than others to tell her. So let's say her mother's visiting for the weekend. You may want to hold off
right.
Until you can actually talk with her privately. If the kids have a school concert that night, that's not the best time because you're not going to be able to talk about it. However, if you find yourself in that situation and today's not the great day and tomorrow's not the great day and the next day is not the great day, we got to be real careful because conviction can wear off and we end up hiding what ought to be brought into the light. And so it's appropriate to assess the moment, but if the moment is never correct, then we eventually just need to share and trust God.
And Rob, you know what I'm hearing also too, that yeah, in a situation like that, when really you can't bless the person, it's only going to, quote, emotionally destroy them because they're going to really feel the brunt of that. But I think what you're saying also as a rule of thumb is to make sure there's margin for time to communicate after you tell them. Don't ever put it where you have to cut off the conversation and then now move into something else. Mom is here. You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to get to the place. The school play starts in about 30 minutes. No, it has to be room that this discussion can go for as long as it needs to go on. And I guess, yeah, there's no good time or best time to do it. But I like what you also said, too. If you wait too long, the conviction could wear off. And you say, then you talk yourself out. Well, let's put it this way. The enemy will give you the power of suggestion. You don't really need to tell her that. She'll never find out. You don't need to tell her that. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. And so that's why I know with timing that I know every man's wife is different, but we got to use some type of wisdom. And I think, again, inviting God into that, saying, God, you tell me, Holy Spirit, tell me, is this a good time? Should I do it now? The Holy Spirit is going to lead you in spirit and truth and tell you what you can do as well in handling that. Now, you notice I skipped tool number four, which was mirroring. And I kind of saved that to the end because we're almost getting to the end-up questions already. But mirroring, because I know we've heard a lot about mirroring and reflecting back what we thought we heard you say for understanding. And there's a lot of benefits to doing mirroring. But I want you to, before you tell us the benefits, tell us why is that so important for a healthy marriage and healthy communication with your spouse?
Yeah, there's one main reason it's important, and then one very important rule in it that we've got to apply. One of the reasons it's so important is because we are always responding out of what we understand to have happened. This is always the case. If we get a text, we respond with all the tone we inserted, and when we're talking with our spouses, we've got to make sure we actually understand what she meant when she said this. And the only way, particularly if there's ongoing disagreement or tensions, the only way to make sure is to ask her, when you said that, did you mean this? And then here's the most important rule. She gets to determine what she meant.
Say that again, Rob. I love that.
Yeah,
say that again.
She is the final arbiter for what she meant by what she said. So she may say, you know, Rob, are you going to wear those pants? And I'm going to say, what, you think I look fat in these pants? No, I didn't mean that. Yes, you did. And now all of a sudden, we've become the arbiter of what she said. And mirroring is way out the window, as well as understanding. What she may have meant is that where you can't see it, there's like a tear or a streak. It may not have been a comment on you at all, right? So when you said that, Gina, did you mean that I didn't look good in these? She's like, no, I need to wash them. All right, now I understand what you mean. So the person who initiated the idea is the final arbiter on what it actually meant. And when a wife will do that with her husband and a husband will do that with his wife, now we've got actual understanding happening in communication.
Right. Now, Rob, you're going to hate me when I ask you this, right? With mirroring.
Go ahead.
Because you said, Joe, you're just stirring up a hornet's nest. No, because I experience all of it. I see it all. Now, because I love that. I've never heard it put that way, but you're absolutely right. They should be able to determine what they meant. But Rob, I'm going to ask you this. What if you say, okay, did I look, you said I look fat. And no, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant when I said that. Okay, we're giving it to them. What if they're lying and they really did mean that, but now they saw it hurt your feelings, now they're backing off of it?
So, okay, I don't hate that you're going to ask me this at all. That actually is a kind response from them. They weren't intending to hurt us.
I got you, yes.
So maybe they're backing off in a way that is not ideal, right? But the fact that they're backing off, we should be thankful for that. Because now in her way, she's trying to foster unity and kindness. So if they're lying, and remember, we're in this for the long haul, right? If she's really concerned with how I look in those pants, I'm going to wear them at some point again, right? So maybe she'll come back at it 2 days later and say, hey, hon, do you mind if we get rid of these pants? You know, they were stylish about 22 years ago.
Right.
But, you know, she can come back at it more carefully another day. But if she's lying, that may be her way of saying, oh, I didn't think that would upset him. I don't want to upset him. Let me adjust my speech.
Rob, that is so good. That is so, I'm glad I did ask you that. That's great because that makes perfect sense. Yeah, because now we should give them that. You know what that does? That allows us to extend them grace and mercy. Okay, she may have meant that, but look, the fact that she's telling me that's not what she meant is now, wow, She didn't want to hurt me like that. And so that's actually is a good thing. That's a great, I love the way you put that. That is awesome.
Could I say one more thing about
this? Go right ahead, Rob. Go right ahead.
I say it multiple times in the book. I don't know that I've said it on either of our episodes here. These tools are not intended for a marriage where there's abuse happening, where somebody is not safe, where there's violence happening. I'm not asking a spouse who's being abused to be careful about how she responds. Maybe she can steer the abuse towards a redemptive end. I say this multiple times in the book, I want that spouse to get safe. I want them to involve the authorities where need be. This has in mind the vast majority of marriages, not those crisis situations where safety is an issue.
Right. And, you know, and Rob, I'm glad that you did bring that up. We had Gary Thomas. I'm sure you're familiar with Gary Thomas's work, Sacred Marriage, but he came out with a book called When to Walk Away. And it's about dealing with toxic people. And he covered that too, as well, about that, that there is a time when you need to pull away from a person and you can engage that person because they are toxic. And the way he put it is kind of the same light that you did. He says that, because I think I asked him a question about how serious is this toxic, relationships real? How serious is it? He says that it's serious. He says not as many toxic people as you will believe, but it is important. He said, but the severity of the toxicity is probably underestimated. You know, so like you're saying, you're talking about the majority of healthy marriages. Well, we say healthy, put that in air quotes, but where they at least have, there's no abuse going on. They're not trying to harm and hurt the other person with ill will intention. And they're not lashing out because of their own trauma to try to see if they can destroy physically or emotionally abuse the person. But absolutely. So I'm glad that you did point it out. Thank you for mentioning that. Now, we're getting ready to transition to the man of questions. But before I do that, I want to ask you just one last question. If the reader could get just one thing from your book, because you've given us a lot of great stuff, Rob, but if they could just get one thing from your book, what would you want them to walk away with?
I'd want them to walk away with the confidence that with God, healthy and growing marital communication is very possible. It really is. These tools can help, for sure. But God is the ultimate helper in this, and He desires this for their marriage. I would never want a couple to feel like they're beyond being able to honor God in their marriage. It's accessible. It's possible because God wants this in every marriage. A hope that they could actually grow in this. So that would be my desired takeaway.
Thank you so much, Rob. We're talking to my guest, Rob Flood, who's on part two of this conversation I'm having with him about his book, With These Words, Five Communication Tools for Marriage and Life. And Rob has blessed us so much by diving deeper into these tools. So, Rob, it's that time. We didn't get to do it last time you were on the show, but it's time for our infamous man up questions. And they're just five quick questions starting with the letters M-A-N-U-P. And all they require is your fearless honesty. So the question is, are you ready, Rob?
I'm ready, I think.
All right. Yeah. No, I don't think you're going to have a problem with it. And guys, we'll be right back with my guest, Rob Flood, after this short break. Are you ready to cheat on your wife? No, I'm not talking about that kind of cheating. I'm talking about gaining an unfair advantage on how to understand your wife better, love her deeper, avoid unnecessary arguments, and even have more sex with her. That's right. Based on the success of our Marriage Secrets for Men boot camps, we're finally sharing the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men with the public. This is the quick reference must-have go-to guide for husbands and wannabe husbands that can help stack the odds in your favor. The Bible tells us to live with our wives in an understanding way. Well, the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men is your shortcut to doing that. So you'll learn four questions you can ask your wife in every argument to avoid future arguments. You'll learn the 45 questions you can ask her to learn and master her heart. 50 ways to love your wife better. 6 things you can say to her to manage her response before you damage her emotions. 10 things you can do right now that will lead to more sex, 8 ways to get her to stop ignoring you, even 49 ways to have more meaningful conversations with your wife, and much, much more. See, this is the manual every divorced man wishes he had before he got married. Well, at least I did. And I'm so God confident that the Marriage Cheat Sheet will become one of the most valuable referred to resources in your marriage library that if you don't think so, just send it back for a full refund. Trust me, next to our Marriage Secrets for Men bootcamp, this will be the second best investment you will ever make in your marriage. Now, to get your copy of the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men on sale for a limited time only, just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the store button. That's realmenconnect.com. Welcome back, Mighty Warriors. I'm talking to my guest, Rob Flood, who's the author of With These Words, Five Communication Tools for Marriage and in Life. And he says he's ready to take on the man of questions. And, you know, we told you about the man of questions, Rob, even before you came on the show. But when I go through the show and I'm talking to guys, I kind of, you know, tweak them a little bit to kind of fit the occasion. And so we're going to start with the M. The M starts with mistake. What mistake did you learn the most from as a man when it comes to using your words with Gina?
So it's my failure to believe the best until that's no longer reasonable. I early on, I would have jumped to conclusions, assuming she meant the worst possible interpretation. And so learning to, the way I would normally phrase it is charitable judgments, being kind in how I listen to her, assuming she means the best possible judgment and not the worst possible judgment.
You know, I think that could benefit all of us if we, instead of assuming the worst from the other person, assuming the best, give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, what if we went into every conversation thinking, okay, I know Rob is not trying to hurt me. I know Rob loves me. I know Rob cares about me. I know he has my best interests at heart. Now, it doesn't mean you're not going to say something stupid, but I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt that you're going in, you know, we're teammates. You're here to help, not hurt. So, I think that's great. Now, in addition to being an author, we mentioned earlier that you're a pastor as well. And so that means you and Gina probably both deal with a lot of couples, especially a lot of men. So the A stands for attitude. Based on the men that you work with, if you could change one attitude in men when it comes to how they use their words with their spouses, what would you say? Or maybe what would Gina say?
I shared all these answers with her, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I think the number one attitude I would address is passivity. Guys are too comfortable with important things not being spoken about. They don't want to stir the pot. They don't want to upset the apple cart, whatever metaphor you want to use. A passivity, a failure on men's part to take proactivity, whether it's pursuing their wives or taking control of the calendar so that their marriage is prioritized, or in words, as you asked, just allowing the wife to dictate the tone, allowing the wife to dictate the agenda. And of course, we want her to speak into it. The guys aren't supposed to take it over and smother that. But too much, guys don't have a voice in their marriages on what gets talked about. And I'd love to see men be proactive and avoid passivity in these things.
Amen to that. It's not just even in their relationship. I'm talking about even with single men. That's one of our biggest things when it comes to us as men is our passivity. We say one of the telltale signs of a, quote, real man is that he takes active responsibility. Jesus modeled that for us. And so that is great. The N stands for next. And I'm sure you and Gina are doing a lot of work, but I just want to know from you, what would be the next big thing you would attempt to do for God if you couldn't fail when it comes to now getting this message out about being better communication with our wives and our spouses? What would be the next big thing you would do if you knew you couldn't fail?
This was the hardest one for me because I do love what I'm doing. I feel like we're being used effectively within our gifting. We're walking with the Spirit, building into the local church. But the one thing that I would love to be able to do, national marriage ministry with my wife. She's a wonderful speaker, but she's keenly insightful, and she reads people so well. There's just a great gifting there. So much of what I do here as a pastor, certainly in my office, is just me. We do a good number of counseling with couples together, as you mentioned. I would love to do more work with her so that the people I minister to could benefit from her.
Now, did you share that with Gina when you were going over the questions?
I did, yes.
She told me not to
give you that answer.
She told you.
she told me that she could tell you I would love to write more. But you know, I would love to write more. But I would love to do ministry with her, meaningful, effective ministry with
her. Absolutely. Now, the U represents understand. All right, Rob. Now, so when you were younger, what was the one thing you didn't understand about communication with women that you understand better now?
That faithfulness does not always guarantee a specific outcome.
Explain that.
Yeah, I want to. I can do all five of these tools perfectly, and I can have all the best of intentions, and that does not automatically mean Gina will receive it the way I mean it. It doesn't automatically mean that it's going to generate in a happy wife in that conversation. And this is a broader lesson that parenting has taught me. I can be a faithful father. It doesn't guarantee my kids are going to grow up a specific way. And so just, we're called to faithfulness. And First Corinthians 3 talks about how, this is Paul, and when Paul's talking about Paul and Apollos, that, you know, one plants, another waters, but it's God who gives increase. The growth.
Right.
So we are called to faithfulness, and we should not determine whether God is worthy of following or not if the outcome doesn't turn out the way we want it. We're called to faithfulness. God determines the fruitfulness. And so I needed to understand that as a man, and I didn't understand that when I was younger, that we just need to commit to faithfulness in speech and in action, doing all things to the glory of God, and leave the results to Him.
Man, that is very wise words, Rob. The way my spiritual father told me, and he tells me this all the time when it comes to ministry, because sometimes I get frustrated in men's ministry a lot. You can imagine what that's like, being a pastor. But he says that, Joe, God called you to be faithful, not successful. He determines the increase. He determines the outcome, the results. All you're focused on is your obedience through faithfulness. And those words, and you reiterating those words, that's been at the forefront of my mind and my heart. And I tell you one thing, it gives you a lot more peace. And it takes the pressure off of, quote, performance, because we keep thinking, okay, if I do this, it should always end up this way. That's not always the case. And so I like the way you phrased it, that we're responsible for the faithfulness. God is responsible for the fruitfulness. I love that. I'm gonna liberate that phrase. I like that, Rob. I love that. So here's the last one. We'll let you out of here. The last letter is P, and the P stands for problem. As a mighty man of God, what problem in your life do you still struggle with as a man when it comes to communication with Gina now? What do you still struggle with today, even though you have all this wisdom now?
I hope you don't find this to be a cop-out answer, but it's really the same answer, the faithfulness and the fruitfulness. You said it brings you peace when you trust that. And in my thoughts just 2 moments ago, it was, yeah, when I trust that.
When I trust that, yeah.
When I trust that. I can be a very outcome-driven person. I'm very driven in goals that I have and projects I take on. And, you know, I love my wife dearly. I want her to thrive in the Lord. I want her to know she can thrive underneath my care. And when I don't see that, when I see her struggling with that, I can look at, well, I'm doing this and this and this, and I can demand a certain outcome and wrestle when that doesn't happen. And so it just reveals my ongoing need for sanctification and my ongoing need to walk with Christ and to trust Him for the fruitfulness that happens as a result.
You know, and Rob, I'm glad you said it that way, because I would agree with you. I would come and agree with you when I trust that. And I got to constantly remind myself to trust that. And so I find myself correcting myself more than just walking in it just naturally. I said, that's right, Joe. You got to remind yourself faithfulness, be faithful. God determines the increase, not you. Be obedient, be faithful to His word. Man, you did a great job, man. Thank you for being so transparent, honest, and vulnerable with us with the Man Up Question. You survived it, man. And man, we've come to the end of our show today, but don't you worry. We'll be back to do it again next week with a new guest, with new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. But I'd like to thank my guest, Rob Fluff, for joining us today and being so gracious with his time again. Thank you, Rob, for just agreeing to be on the show twice, allowing yourself to be used this way to allow us to dive deeper into your insights on how we can communicate better with our wives. Thank you so much, man, for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for having me. And I last time as well as this time, I enjoyed the conversation, and I'm looking forward to how this might serve the guys who follow you.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait to get feedback from this interview. But before I let you get out of here, Rob, you mentioned on the last show, but remind them again, if they wanted to reach out to you or even get a copy of your book or find out more about the ministry that you're involved in, What would be the best way for them to do that?
Great. They can go to robfloodauthor.home.blog.
All right. And guys, we'll put that in the show notes as well, so you'll have that so you can reach out to Rob anytime. And please do us a favor, and this is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program. Rate this interview. We got two interviews with Rob Flood. Let us know how you feel about it. If there's something you want me to tell Rob or share with him, or you want to reach out to him directly, let us know what you think, because this is the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. Guys, we're number one on iTunes for a reason, because you keep telling people about us. Don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. We really appreciate it. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with realmenconnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man that God has called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible, terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.